Riders Ready. Der Oldschool BMX Podcast.
My name is Gary Doos.
And you're a sir.
And I'm a sir, yes.
Which is great. Welcome.
Thank you.
Super good to have you, actually. We know you're a legend, especially for the sport that we all love and we're passionate about. So I thought, you know, we have the Riders Ready podcast. I usually don't do this, so this voice is going to be new to a lot of people out there.
Okay.
This is actually Patrick's baby that I get to mend today, which is great.
That's cool.
Hey, I think probably just for everyone out there, before I kind of give them an introduction of the BMX, you know, university and all of that, it's probably just better to give you the word and let you introduce yourself and basically give a bit of your life story, which is, I know it's not going to be easy to do in like 2 minutes, but let's just try to have like the first 5 minutes of you talking and then I'll ask the questions if I have some.
Okay. Well, you're right, that's not to do in 2 minutes. That will take all day long. But in short, it's like this. I was a motocross rider. Concerning BMX, I went to America the first time in 1974.
Super and early.
At a Yamaha shop, I saw for the first time BMX bike. And right away I got interested in that. I thought, wow, that's something for young kids to learn to ride on, maybe later to become a motocross rider. That was the original idea. That was 1974. And finally in 1978, I had gathered so much information from the NBA, from the NBL, and from USA BMX, what's now called USA BMX, that I thought I can start something new here in Europe. So early 1978, at the Motocross International Race in Valkenswaard, I started the demo. That was the first time we came out. And from there on, it all got going. In October 21st, I think it was, in the same year, I started the Stichting Fietscross Nederland, a foundation, Fietscross BMX Holland.
Yeah.
And from there on, it all started to roll. 1979 was the real first year that we organized events. We had something in the beginning, something like 120 license holders. So that was okay to start with. Anyway, the sport developed. In 1980, we had Afro TV getting interested in the sport. And that was the boom. That was, in Deutsch sagt man, Werbung hat Erfolg.
Mm-hmm.
And that is what happened. You know, we have had Afro TV for 4 years. In the summertime, 4 days, every other 2 weeks to broadcast. And it boomed. In 1985, we had 5,000 license holders.
In the Netherlands?
In the Netherlands only.
Yeah, which is crazy.
Yeah. Well, in the meantime, I had set up the IBMXF together with George Esser from America and Tadashi Inoue from Japan. And that started off very well, too. UCI got interested, or FIAC at the time, was an amateur league section from UCI. They were very interested in that. And finally, in 1996, we got overtaken by UCI. So now everything is under UCI flag, as a matter of fact. And that is in very short how BMX developed and how I got and was involved in that development.
But let's just kind of like, you started with motocross, right?
Uh-huh.
So, I mean, there must be, I think we all had that. I basically loved motocross, Bob Hanna and stuff like those were the people that I looked at when I was a kid.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, I went to a motocross race and then someone got injured really badly and my mom, at that time still very dominant, said, no way in hell.
I can understand.
But I mean, you were so passionate about motocross.
Yeah.
Like, how did you transition from there to BMX? Like, that's just the interesting piece. Like, how, and did you ever race BMX? Like,
the interesting thing is that my main thought was, I see those small kids riding motorcycles, kids of 5, 6, 7, 8 years old. The motorcycles were much too fast for them. I thought BMX is much better. Their muscles are trained, their condition gets better, their reaction is getting better, mentality is getting better. And if they are getting tired, they just slow down. But on a motorcycle, they keep on throttling and they crash and they burn, as a matter of fact. So that was my main goal, to start and to set it up as a learning school for motocross. That was my main goal. But after a couple of years, it became fun. Oh, that would be nice if it would be an Olympic sport. And there wasn't even a big organization yet internationally. So now it started from there, to try to get it as big as possible.
Yeah. How did you actually cope with like the beginnings of BMX? Like, I remember in Germany, whenever we rode the bikes, it was like always perceived as kid bikes.
Yep.
And also sort of the whole look and feel of BMX. So in school, 501 jeans, Vans, an Oakley t-shirt.
Yep.
People didn't get it. No. Like, to me, I was an alien to them.
Yeah.
I don't know, how did you kind of cope with that? Like, was that an issue in the Netherlands? I know Netherlands is full of bicycles, right?
Yeah.
It's a bicycle nation, let's just put it that way.
Absolutely, yeah.
So I don't know if they were more open to the 20-inch smaller bikes, or if that was also a...
They were, because otherwise you can't have 5,000 license holders in 4 or 5 years' time.
True.
But they still looked upon BMX as small bikes, big kids. You know, as a children's sport. Mm. Even within FIAC, which we had conversation about working together, the secretary of the FIAC, Madame Giuliani, I never forget that, during a meeting in Italy, together with the whole FIAC racing committee, she said, BMX, Mr. Dus, that's a play for kids. I was so, how do you say that? Angry about what she was saying there, because I already experienced that it was more than a play for kids. In the older age classes, it became slowly a real sport. They were training and they were getting much better, you know. So, yeah, that is what happened.
I mean, it's Olympic, but it's still a niche sport, right? Like, even today, it's still kind of, it's not exactly a broad sport.
No.
But I do believe, like, the Netherlands are pretty good at it. The French, obviously, they won.
Yeah.
Right?
Oh, boy. I was so jealous about them.
Yeah.
1, 2, 3.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. Something.
But, I mean, also, if you see the sport, it's just really evolved.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So, you've probably the person with the most experience from when you first saw it in the U.S. to where it is today.
Yeah.
How do you feel about that?
I think it's fantastic. A sport, technically, looking at it, is incredible how the sport developed. I can say the same about motocross. In my time, I was one of the first to start the training, conditioning, you know?
Yeah.
That's all so professional now. If you see Eli Tomek, for instance, how he trains, I follow. His father is a former BMXer, mountain biker, from the early days, and I follow his training program. It's incredible. And the same is with BMX. It's so professional. They have training facilities, probably also with BDR, at Olympic level, you know, at within the organizations. That's good to see.
Well, not only that, I also think, like, if you look at media, like when we grew up, I basically didn't have that, right? Like, I had people going, you need to take protein. I'm like, I don't know what that is. You know, all of these things where you get a lot of notions, but you don't really know.
Yeah.
Today, you go on YouTube, you see, you know, nourishment, you see training, you see all of that.
It's all public. Also.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So how do you feel about, like, how does media, well, how did they contribute to the development? How can they contribute even more from your point of view?
I think they should do what I did in the early days. Werbungschaftervolk, sag ich nochmals. The national organization should do much more for publicity, for marketing the product.
Yeah.
They should look at it as a business, you know, and not as a sport where you gain money from. That's as many organizations, that's the case. And if they do good promotions on TV, we had so much benefit from Afro TV and later on Cross TV up until 1993. They came to Slagharen, they made movies, they put it on national television, and it still helped develop the sport. And that is what's lacking a lot at the moment, I think, internationally, because what's happening in Holland is happening in France, is happening in Germany. And like in France, where they had the Olympics now, that gave a boom because they were so good, those guys. And yeah, that gave them a boom in license holders too. But it will flat down. Like at the moment in Holland, at the highest point in 88, we had 10,000 license holders in Holland, small country. Right now, I asked two guys who work here for the KNBU, and I said, do you know the figures at the moment? Yeah, of course, we know. How many? 900 actual races. I can't imagine, you know? And I can't imagine that KNBU is sitting back and just let it go. And there's enthusiasm is lacking.
Yeah. I mean, if you look at it, right, I think E.T., the movie, mm-hmm, had a lot of to do with the boom in the 80s.
Sure.
Then you had like Rad and things like that yeah, just kind of, you know, built that momentum.
Yeah.
I think that's the thing that's missing right now. I get you. Like, yeah, I think France, that obviously ignites something, yeah, right? You have three medal holders. You know, they won first, second, and third, so yeah, gold, silver, bronze. That's going to move something.
Absolutely.
I mean, we see it in our club. We see it in other clubs. Uh-huh. There's not a lot of people coming into this sport.
It's crazy, and
it's crazy, yeah. But at the same time, I think it probably also has to do with the youth and distraction, right?
Absolutely. I agree 100% with you there. It's distraction. There are, since then, since the 80s, there are so many more alternative sports that came in where children also are, like skateboarding, for instance, and freestyle and whatever. I absolutely agree with that, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I was shocked. So both of my sons, I have three kids.
Yeah.
Oldest is a daughter. She started to go into gymnastics, which is,
yeah,
fine.
Yeah.
The other two started football. And, you know, as a sport I never played, I can't do anything with it. That's sort of the standard sports.
Uh-huh.
And then they used the skateboard as a transport. Okay. And they used the BMX bike as a transport, okay, to get there.
That's cool.
To get the training. And I'm like, oh man, like, so sad to see.
Yeah,
But that is the new world that we live in, and everybody does everything, yep, and they have everything. So yeah, they have BMX bikes, they have skateboards. They just don't use them as we use them. Yeah, like, for me, that was,
In a way, they have it all, in general, they have it all too easy. I think your generation, they had really to fight for it, to accomplish something. And now it's, there are so many distractions that, yeah, the concentration lacks a little bit, I think. And yeah, I can't place it 100%, but that is my feeling about it.
That too. I also think it's like Amazon and so on just also make it too easy to get stuff.
Yeah.
Where we actually built sort of a desire.
Uh-huh.
Like, there was a high desirability, right? You saw something and you look at the magazine 80, yeah, 100 times, yeah, and went, pictures, right? Yeah. Over and over again. And yeah, I want that bike. I need that bike. You ordered it. It would come like half a year, yeah, later. That's kind of where you go today to build that kind of desirability.
Uh-huh.
Is almost not possible because it's too easy to get.
But where do you see at the moment what we saw in the early days, all those magazines and things? Most of them are gone. In the United States, they have Pool magazine, for instance.
Yeah.
And that works there. You know, again, Werbungschaft Erfolg.
Yeah.
If people see that and you can manage that to get that to them every week, for instance, they think, oh, that's interesting. Ah, that looks nice. That color is great. I want to have that. That there's something that, but national organizations don't think like that.
No.
To make publicity like
No,
that.
We know that. Like, Bund Deutscher Radfahrer, yeah, also kind of destroyed the sport in the late 80s when they did all the rulings with no stickers and front brakes and no trick jumps, where you knew that 80% of the time it wasn't a trick jump, it was people trying to survive in the, yeah, air because, yeah, they were, yeah, touching each other.
Yeah.
But if people are not from the sport, they can't really tell the difference. And that's where I really felt that actually broke the sport a bit.
Yeah, that's
so
a bit.
The federation didn't really help.
No,
it actually counteracted the publicity of the, yeah, sport.
The same in Holland.
Yeah.
In effect. Yeah.
That's not good. Where do you think BMX is going to go?
Well, it has been a very difficult and hard discussion to get the Olympics in America. They had to meet certain criteria, extra. The problem was that in many of the Olympic tracks. They built very expensive tracks, €400,000-€500,000 euros of expenses. And after a year, you know, it was gone, the track. So it was wasted money. That's what they realized within UCI. They realized that themselves also. And that was a discussion. Must BMX go on as an Olympic sport also in the United States? And they made some kind of arrangement that it still will be. But I wonder what it will be in 4 years' time after the Los Angeles Olympics.
How do you think Los Angeles is going to be? I mean, it's kind of the birth, I'm just going to call California the birthplace of,
yeah,
of BMX.
That's true.
As it was known in the 80s, I do think there was niches in the Netherlands and that were riding bikes already. But
we tease the Americans with that.
But, yeah.
You know, they made BMX as BMX, the sport that it is today.
Yeah.
Yeah.
LA, how do you think LA is going to be as it is the birth ground of BMX?
Well, I hope they get enough attention. I think they are fanatic enough, Americans, to try to copy what the French did.
Mm-hmm.
I hope they will, you know, that they show that they are still maybe the leading country, but I have my doubts. There will be other countries, like England is very serious about it. France will be serious about it. Holland is at the moment at the low a little bit, you know. Some top riders are leaving the sport or are injured or whatever. So, but in general, I think they will organize a good event. I believe that. USA BMX will organize it, and they have the ability and the money to make it a fantastic event.
And then you still think that in the future Olympics, we might not see BMX, even though...
I have great worries about that.
Mm.
I'm very close to several UCI people, and I hear the discussions, and I'm very worried about that. Yeah.
Okay.
If that means that BMX will go down in publicity, so much TV on TV, international events on TV, you don't see also. That should be more in a way that will help the sport. But that went down also a little bit, you know, the interest in that from TV companies. So I don't know where to go there.
Well, I think you had formats like Nitro Circus, you know.
Yeah, that's America, eh?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you look at that and you kind of get that also drives publicity for motocross, skateboarding,
yeah,
BMX.
That's true. Yeah. Yeah.
Again, it's not expanding to a boom as we had it in the 80s.
No.
But if you compare like today's sport with when, I mean, you did the world championships in Slackharen, right?
Yep.
You were like the lead
project
manager or?
No, what? I set up everything.
You set
there.
It up.
Yeah, yeah. The sole organizer. Made me crazy almost, but I did it.
Okay.
And I wanted it to be an example for the whole of Europe. This is how you should do it. And it took about 5, 6, 7 years before, like in Norway, they really found a way to copy it in a way. They had a very well organized world championship. But that was also a problem with the IBMXF in the beginning, and later IBMXF FIAC, to get everybody motivated to do the most to make it a real world championship. That was sometimes difficult. And now it's standard with UCI. They say, here are the rules for organizing an event. You must do all that, and otherwise you can't get it.
But that must have been a feeling of freedom too, right? I mean, you were able to just do what you...
Yeah.
And create. No rules. You basically created the rules.
That's it, yeah. I was IBMXF secretary, and we had the president, George Esser, but I arranged everything, you know. And I had ideas about how to set up the sport, how to try things, and that's what I did, not only at the World Championship in 83, but also the races after that, the European Challenge Cup events.
Mm-hmm.
Every time, besides the rules, I had something extra involved to make it even more spectacular. Even with the World Cup project that I did in mid-90s, I even had mountain bike involved at the World Cup events.
Okay.
That looked great, but, you know, they said, no, it must be only 20-inch bikes. And that's a shame, I think, in a way. Both disciplines, mountain bike and BMX, could have benefit from doing something like that. But they skipped it finally. They said only 20 inch.
Absolutely. But if you look back at that, do you think, or from your point of view, was the World Championship one of your biggest achievements? Or was it just the one of the stepping stones to bigger achievements?
For me, it feels like one of the stepping stones. You had the IBMXF was the first thing. I had so many discussions with Rennie Roger, who organized the Jack BMX World before that. And when I told him, Rennie, I'm going to start an international, he was there himself also, an international organization where all countries in the world can affiliate to make it and send riders to make it a real international world championship and not a world championship organized by a promoter, a bicycle owner with maybe 1,500 riders and 2-3 countries like Japan, Venezuela and Holland.
Mm.
That's not a real world championship in my view.
Question, like you were always sort of, you always thought, or let's say, as of those world champions, you thought it should be Olympic, BMX should be Olympic.
Yeah, it's very idealistic thought it was at that time, but I was a young man. I thought, well, that could be an Olympic sport, you
know. It was a vision, right?
And it was a vision, yeah.
Why do you think it took so long?
UCI.
Okay.
I was in the board of Royal Dutch Cycle Federation, and one of the board members was Hein Verbrugge.
Mm.
He became the president of UCI at the time that we were talking about working together. And at a certain point, he said, Gerrit, if you will support us getting IBMXF within FIAC later on in UCI, I guarantee you that BMX will be an Olympic sport. He kept his word. He was the one who internationally, but also with the IOC, he was a member of the IOC. He was the one who motivated everybody. You know, it should be such a good thing. It's television likable and call it whatever you like. But it took from 1995 till 2004 before they said, okay, let's make it an Olympic sport.
It's a good track, by the way.
Yeah.
From Queen.
Yeah. One of my best. I like it.
Okay.
But so he was really the man, besides
that.
The lobbying that everybody did, he was the man who really pushed it and he made it worthwhile.
I just always think it's interesting because you said earlier, right, that there's only 900 in
Holland.
Licensees and it's a small sport. But if you compare it to other small sports like volleyball, judo, whatever they have in the Olympics, sometimes I go, some of these sports are in there from a traditional point of view, but not because it's a mass sport.
No, that's true.
Right?
Yeah.
Like how many people weightlift compared to BMX?
Yeah. Only positive thing about the sports you are mentioning now, they don't need a 500,000 BMX track being built.
True.
You know,
absolutely, yes.
And that is what the people at UCI, but also within the UCI and towards
look
the
at,
organizers, that's where they look at it.
Yeah.
And the prices are only going up. It's getting totally crazy.
But you have that in everything, right? If you have a football World Cup happening, they're going to use they're building new stadiums instead of using the ones that exist.
Yeah.
Or then they update the ones that exist.
Yeah.
I mean, I saw South Africa when they hosted the World Cup. They were rebuilding everything and building new. And most of them are no longer really in use.
Yeah, yeah. It's crazy. Yeah?
So you have similar situations there.
Yeah. I don't know really where that will go lead to, I must say.
So in 1984, you stepped down from your position.
Yep, in Canada.
What was the... Was there a certain moment that led to that, or was there...
No, it was... I always had in my mind, I will do this for 5 years. Then I changed to something else 5 years. Then I changed to something else 5 years. So I set up IBMXF.
Mm-hmm.
Then I started to organize events at Slagharen,
mm-hmm.
where in the meantime I worked for the company. After that, I started 5 years working with really big teams like AMF, GT,
mm-hmm.
was also a very big sponsor. I knew one of the owners, Richard Long, was a very good friend of mine. He became friends in 1983 when we had a discussion about factory teams competition at the World. And there was a problem, I realized that I solved that problem in a way that Richard Long said, that's the only fair way. And from then on, we became very close friends.
So what was the problem and how did you solve it?
That's a good thing. It's very hard to even get that back. I didn't. Normally, I write down everything, but it has to do with the number of riders and which riders in which classes. And something wasn't correct according to him, and he was right.
Mm.
And I said, yeah, you're right. We're going to change it now. That was possible when I was organizing it myself. Plus, I was the IBMXF man. If you want to do that now within UCI, that takes maybe a year before you can change something.
You have bureaucracy everywhere.
Yeah,
Doesn't help. let's take it away from the actual sport for a second.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you look at the... Look, I admire... Like, we see the riders today.
Yeah.
Right here. And I admire how these young guys... go through the rhythm section and how they ride. It's very technical and very fast.
Absolutely.
And really, really good. The way they look, not so much. I think, you know, I'm just, from a coolness point of view, I think the 80s were cooler. Like, the sport was cooler, it looked cooler. So saying that, and I know I'm probably being unfair to the young BMXers, but it is a different sport to me. Mm-hmm. It's evolved and it's changed and click pedals with the little shoes, just, you know, we're Vans people. We always kind of needed that. It was part of the culture, I felt. So saying that, looking back, who was the coolest rider that is in your mind where you go, I thought he was always cool and great?
Holland or worldwide?
Doesn't matter.
Yeah. For me, people like Stu Thompson.
Yeah.
Timmy Judge. There are so many to be called that I know personally very well also. Yeah. What they did in the early days when they had a race. During the race, they did cross-ups and whatever, you know.
I know.
And still in a way that they didn't hinder other people, you know. And you don't see that
style.
Anymore.
Style. It's complete stylish.
That's
good.
What I like. That's what I like about motocross also.
Yeah.
Like in my time, I think with my team I had at the time, I was the only one who started to ride on our back wheel and waving.
Yeah.
And it was forbidden by the organization. Don't wave anymore. That's dangerous.
So you were popping wheelies and waving at the same time? Okay.
During the race. And what happens now? They make jumps of 40 meters on a double jump.
And they wave.
They scrub their engines, you know. Yeah. How can they do that? I can't imagine myself, you know. So, yeah, there's a lot of change there.
Which I love, right?
Absolutely.
That's the thing that I always thought that the Bund Deutscher Radfahrer kind of destroyed the sport, because it went from people jumping with style to very technical.
Yeah.
You know, just kind of pushing and going over obstacles without any sort of air, which for the spectator just takes away a lot, right?
It is.
You mentioned motocross. Like, I watch that every now and then. And I like the US series right now, and I just think it's amazing, right?
Oh, man.
And like the whoop-de-doos and stuff that they, like, how they go through them and over them, and then when
incredible.
They do a big jump.
Yeah.
One hand wave, looking back, where's the competitor?
Yeah,
I think it's just so cool. But again, that's the style thing, right? That can change. I mean, I truly, like, I had a, I don't know, to me, at the beginning when I saw these young guys ride, I just always kind of felt like that's not the sport that I grew up with.
Mm.
How do you feel about the Vet Cup? Like the veteran, I mean, if you look at it, right, Ralf Mauritz, he created this. And it's 31 years old now.
It's incredible, isn't it?
And I mean, I've been to a couple, and it's always good because you meet guys from the past, you meet people that you raced, and we all have one thing in common, a huge passion for the 80s and BMX.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, that's true. That's what I like about this too. I've been three times here also now myself. I think it's fantastic. I wish, 31 years, that's incredible.
Yeah.
That's the longest existing old school event in the whole of Europe. And what I can't understand that we don't have that in Holland, that we don't have that. Okay, in France it's starting now a little bit, for the third time in Bond.
Yeah.
But you know.
And then you have Frogtown in the U.S.
Yeah, but yeah, that's U.S. again. You know, they're always ahead of us in that sense.
Well, and this one they weren't.
Yeah, this, especially with the Veterans Club. No, they weren't.
Yeah, but that said, I mean, it's good. Like, do you see an old school movement right now? Like, I feel there is, but again, I'm kind of in the bubble.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's always, if you're in the bubble, you kind of feel like, hey, there's things happening.
Yeah.
From the outside, I don't know if people see that or feel the same way.
Maybe because the last couple of years I haven't been following a lot, I must say, because of illness of my wife. But I don't see a lot of things going on in that field. Mm. Marcel van der Hurk, who is standing here, he is do something one time a year in Holland.
Mm-hmm.
And it looks a little bit like the Veteran Cup, but it's by far not the thing you guys set up here. That's really great, fantastic. I always try to promote it on my website several times and on Facebook. Well, you have to go there. Where are the Dutch guys, to challenge them? But for some reason, I think they are all too busy or something like that. It stays back a little bit.
Yeah, I think, again, it's also a bit of the German, we're holding ourselves back a bit.
Uh-huh.
Like, just to be clear, German mentality is always sort of, we ask for permission.
Uh-huh.
And this time we also, like, we created a flyer that was based on the BMX Action, sort of a cover.
Yeah, yeah.
And there was a lot of doubt where we went, I don't know if we don't know if we can
do
use
that.
This.
Yeah, why not?
And then I reached out to BMX Action, sent them a note, and Toby Henderson came back and said, send me what you're doing.
Yeah.
I sent it to him, also the webpage from the Veteran Cup.
Yeah.
He went in, he's like, he thinks great. This is great, go for it, tag me.
Yeah.
And we're like, wow. This is cool.
Yeah, I think the next, if you want for yourself, as a German organization group, what you should try to do, I think, is try to get a couple of Americans over here and make publicity about that. I'm almost sure that if, like in Bond, as it looks like, Stu Thompson is going there. And I think there will be one or two more that will be there. If you can arrange something like that, I think of Perry Kramer and Byron Friday and Stu Thompson and whoever more, and the guy you just mentioned, Toby Henderson, yeah. I have been in France a couple of years ago where all those guys, even Eddie Viola was there. Oh, man, that was an event, fantastic. That was in Cavaillon. That's for the first time they had something like that also. That works for sure.
Well, since you always do things in 5-year increments.
Yeah.
It would be great to have you on board to help us do this and create something where we get the Americans over. We might do it in 5 months. We might do it in a year, but it would be great to get your support, because honestly, it's one of those things where, again, a lot of people know a lot of people, but there's always this, if we get them over, we have to pay a fortune for them to fly them over and all of these things where you go... I'm pretty sure that if there's a foundation, if there's a sponsoring, whatever, we can get this managed somehow that everybody's happy.
Yeah.
Right now, it just feels like it's such a big mountain to push where you go, how do we get through this?
Yeah. Now, that's a difficult thing, and that's something to think about, but I would love to help you guys. All the old guys from the early days that were at Slaharen, for instance, I have still today so many contacts with them all the time. Maybe can help motivate them to come over. And yeah, it would be great, of course, if you could do something with some kind of fee for flight or whatever. But we have to think about it. Maybe we can find sponsors for that.
Yeah.
That would be great.
I think if you find a sponsor, as you said, marketing only works if it's like it has to be related to the target group, so we need to find someone who who also has a benefit of a Stu Thompson coming over, yeah. right? And I get that. We just need to find, like, we're not going to do it today.
No.
We can do a brainstorm.
Would be
if
great. Well, while we are talking, I am thinking of a good friend of mine, a pioneer BMXer called. Here we go. Lammert Moeman is his name. He is the owner of GEE. That's a company that works worldwide with shower stuff and mm-hmm. toilet stuff or whatever. He's been the sponsor of Laura Smulders and her team, the girl who became third the first mm-hmm. Olympics. I just popped into my mind, I'm in a car with him, ending August, going to Bond. I will talk about with him about that.
He's sponsoring awesome.
Now, even today, he's sponsoring Papendal. He's a sponsor at Papendal as well.
Yeah.
And it might be, he is one of the guys thinking like you and me, it might be that he is interested in working with that and trying to get, and if somebody can do it, it's him. That's I'm sure about it.
And just FYI, like, we also know that this track is, I mean, it's basically evolved to a modern BMX track.
Yeah.
That is for fast riders, fast bikes.
Yeah.
What we are doing is, because we need to secure the starting block.
Yeah.
We're gonna build a second track on the side of that,
uh-huh.
which is more old school led.
Yeah.
It's gonna
yeah.
be more dirt.
Yep.
BMX.
Okay.
Make BMX dirt
okay.
again. Dirt and more old school, like speed jumps, doubles, and stuff like that. That are more. I don't want to say age appropriate, but because we're building it as a, hey, youth gets to train there if we're building on the track, so you uh-huh. have a starting gate and all of that, but at the same time, it's a dirt track and
yeah.
it's more for
that's
the
cool.
Old school
yeah.
environment.
Yeah.
So that could definitely be also a driver for the future to kind of go, we actually have a true old school race
that would be nice.
Environment.
Yeah.
Parallel to, I mean,
to the big
you can also use the big track
yeah,
anytime.
Yeah.
That's would
good.
Be really nice.
We have to get back to that later on.
100%.
Yeah.
Hey, you want to talk about the time that you were team manager?
Mm-hmm.
Like, how was that for you?
Great. The best thing was, of course, AMF team.
Mm-hmm.
We had a sponsorship deal through the KWU with an insurance company. And they provided us with 90,000 guilders at the time. I had a team of 5 riders, and they were not having a salary, but everything was paid for them.
Yeah, it's awesome.
When they did well in the racing, they had benefits from that. We had a doctor watching over them. We had a fitness trainer watching them. As a former motocross rider, I had a lot of experience to explain to them mentally what they should do. Everything was really, for that time, professionally organized. And I love that so much. And even today, you know, people from Europe, a lot of them from that time, they still talk about the AMF team. If I put a picture of the AMF team on my Facebook page, then I have right away a lot of comments on that.
Well, that's good. And what would you say was your biggest accomplishment as a team manager?
That was with the GT team,
mm-hmm.
winning the manufacturer team trophy. There's a world championship trophy in America.
Wow.
Before the American GT team.
Oh, wow.
They were so quiet. And I've got still the trophy. That's a BMX, so it's his helmet holding like that. We did win 2, and I gave it to Richard Long. He said, yeah, it was your team, you get it. 2 months later, a package came at my house. He says, Garrett, we had 2. What do I do with 2? Here is your trophy back to you. So it's standing in my small little working office now.
Well, that's nice, though. Yeah. I mean,
that was the best thing that happened. That was so nice to beat the Americans in Waterford. And that was great. Yeah.
So who do you think at that time was, in your team, the biggest talent?
Oh, Dale Holmes was doing very well. Christophe Levesque. No. Christophe Levesque was with MCS. Dale Holmes did a well job. And we had a little guy from Czechoslovakia, Vladislav Kas,
mm-hmm.
10-year-old. He beat everybody. That's wow. incredible. And Corinne Dorland, of course. Eh? That was also a top rider. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that was very nice. Yeah. Still gives me good feeling.
Still gives you goosebumps.
Yeah.
That's nice. Okay. Okay. And then 1988, you were introduced to the BMX Hall of Fame in the US. What did that mean to you?
1980, no, that was later, eh?
It could have been later. It says 88 here. I don't know if that's
right. No. 1989.
Could be.
My son Peter was racing in the United States for 3 months. He finished his school and he wanted to go to the US for 3 months. And in November, I came to the Grand National in Oklahoma. And by surprise, they knew that I was coming over there. And by surprise, I've done a lot of lobbying for them also to get ABA into the FIAC situation. Because we had the NBL at that time. And they were the only accepted organization. Only one could be a member. Eh?
Okay.
But anyway, I was there and I was very much surprised when they invited me to come to a celebration, the Hall of Fame induction ceremony, and I was inducted there. And I felt pretty proud, I must say. I'm not that, what can I say? It's nice. I'm not walking besides my shoes because of that.
Yeah.
But I thought, wow, then I must have meant something for them.
Well, you also got the Royal Award in the Netherlands.
Yeah, that's
Which one means more to you?
Yeah, the Royal Award. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Because, I mean, that's a true appreciation from the country to you, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And the nicest thing about it is that not my family, no, riders from the early days, they said, Gerrit has done so much for BMX, we must try to get him
An award.
An award.
Yeah.
From the government. And they set up a whole story. And it was so much that they told about me. Only facts, not stories, facts. That the mayor of my town, he said, well, I did read 2 pages now. I will stop. There's so much more to go. Gerrit, just come forward and you get your medal, you know. So I'm a knight.
That's awesome. That's crazy. I love it. So you're sir. I have to say sir to you.
With main S, eh?
Yeah, that's nice. Congrats. I think it gives me goosebumps, right?
Yeah.
Right? Just sitting here with you like that.
Yeah.
It's really nice if your accomplishments are actually recognized right? Really, really strong.
Yeah, looking back at the time, for me it was normal because I was so enthusiastic about it. But looking back now, I said, wow, how is it possible, you know, that I did all that?
Yeah. So you mentioned your son.
Yep.
How many children did you have?
Two sons, Nico and Peter.
And both of them, motocross, BMX?
No motocross. In the first place, Nico BMX from 1978, he was the number one, the first number plate within the SFN in 1978. Wow. Not a champion yet, but as number, we were given numbers.
Mm-hmm.
As you reported yourself, you want to become a member, you get a number and the following number and so on. But he was the first license holder. And he stopped racing in 1990. When he got hurt during the ABA Grand National, also in Oklahoma, when somebody else pushed him against a high wall and broke his collarbone for the second time, I believe. And he already...
Have broken ribs?
No, his spleen was taken out.
Oh.
And that was kind of hectic. But anyway, he said, I've been enough in hospitals, I quit. So, till then he has been racing. And Peter, he started racing in... 1982, 1983, and he raced till 2004, so more than 25 years at the highest level, also with the World Cup events in the 90s. Yeah.
So could definitely give the passion to your kids. I wasn't able to, but you made that. That's good.
And I didn't force them, it just happened. They were young. And my wife, the whole family, always traveled together for many, many, many years, all over Europe, to Australia, to Japan 3 times. We went there with the whole family. That was fantastic, yeah.
Yeah, 2 more minutes. 2 minutes. 2 Minuten. Ja, dann.
Seid ihr durch?
Ja, wir brauchen noch 2 Minuten.
Das ist kein Problem. Habt ihr Stopp gemacht oder was dann?
Nee, das läuft noch. So. Aber
ja, ist ja kein Problem. Wir können noch 2 Stunden noch.
Nein.
Oh, das ist kein Problem. Das kann absolut.
Schön hier im Wohnmobil, ne? So als Holländer, ne?
Ja, fabelhaft.
Also viel Spaß.
Ja. Gesellig.
Ja, gesellig. Gesellig, ja. Gemütlich.
Ja. Uh-huh. Just a few Dutchies that you think. No, that's great, though. So if you look at the old school tracks, because we want to build one and we don't have a lot of space.
Yeah.
What's your advice? Which one was most impressive in the 80s where you go, it's a nice track? Look at that one.
Yeah.
I mean, BMX Plus, I think, is they always have all the tracks outlined.
I was thinking of that. You know, look that up.
Yeah, we have that. Like, yeah, we're
I've got it also.
Yeah. I just thought if there's one in your mind where you go, these guys want to build something, that would be a great track.
Yeah.
Because it has a lot of great features.
Uh-huh.
Again, we don't have a lot of space. It's like,
that's
do
a
you
problem,
have a tunnel?
Yeah.
How do you make it?
No.
Well, you could.
Yeah.
Because then you're, at least you're using...
You know, in that sense. Okay. Yeah.
Create an 8 without... having people run into each other.
Yeah, that's possible. We had that in Holland also, at 2 tracks, where you ran over the other one. You know? Yeah. But that's kind of difficult, you know. The nicest thing, I think, would be to have a little bit of a hilly side, like what they have in Bompt,
yeah,
but also in America, a little bit of a hilly side.
A little bit downhill track.
A little bit downhill, yeah. You know. It saves some energy and legs in the sense of,
you don't have to pedal that much.
That's it. So, and it gives you some more speed. It has risks also in it, of course, when crashing. But still, if it's dirt, it's not too bad. But I don't have an idea about exactly what kind of track. It depends on the space you have.
It's going to be a pretty basic.
Yeah, but that's okay.
Secondary track for here.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be great.
Yeah.
It's going to be dirt. Must,
yeah, especially for the old guys, you know. There are now guys of 60 plus who want to race then.
That's what we're trying to explain to the club management as well. Is like, hey, we don't want to wait too long because we're all kind of, you know, we're reaching that age where we don't know. Like, the thing is I think we're all in this age where we kind of understood that kids, most of them are kind of almost out of the house house. And now we can focus on what we... are passionate about, and as long as I can still ride a bike, I want to ride the bike.
Yeah, I understand.
That is the passion.
Yeah,
I don't want to kill myself though.
No, of course.
This is
I already saw it.
Yeah. A little training accident this week, where you go, that's not what you want.
No.
So we want to stay safe, but at the same time, we also want this track to kind of happen.
Yeah.
Quickly, because you know we don't know how long we have.
Exactly. I wish I could still race. Ride the motocross motorcycle. I can't because of an injury I had many years ago with my neck.
Okay.
The thing where you do this and this with
the turning.
And I can't have the bumps anymore, you know.
Okay.
It's, the vision gets blur and whatever, so I don't take the risk. But I still ride my mountain bike.
But that's good.
Yeah, I mean,
that's
absolutely.
You need that.
Full suspension. Oh boy. Like,
is it an e-bike?
No. I don't want an e-bike.
No,
as long as I can, I want to use my legs.
Which is great. Like, I was the same for a very long time. I was like, I don't need this. And I turned 50 a couple of years ago. No, and then this friend of mine who actually had a bike shop at the time, he said, Steph, what do you like?
Mm-mm.
You like to go down trails. You're a former BMXer. You like this. Do you like
speed?
Going uphill? And I'm like, not that much. So he's like, so... you have 3 times the fun if you don't have to pedal that much going uphill. And by the way, motocross is one of the most physical sports in the world, and they don't pedal at all.
Absolutely.
So I was like, I was all with him. It's Marcus Stöckel who actually brought me into that. I think we're at time. Anything that you want to give our listeners where you go, guys, keep going, stop it, don't do it anymore. Be against something, be for something.
Try to do it as long as you can. But as safe as possible for yourself. I had to learn that also on my age, that you have to adjust to the age you have. I in my head, I want to go like a 25-year-old, but that's not possible anymore. So don't over-exaggerate too much, but have fun. Have fun, that's the most important part of everything.
And stay safe. Like, this is what we always tell the... A lot of people are actually very hesitant with this track because it is intimidating when you're on the starting block.
Yeah, can understand.
The gate, right? It is intimidating. The thing there is... We always try to explain to everyone, like, have fun. But you do have some people that as soon as they're at the starting gate, they turn 16 again. Yeah. And they have this this desire to win where I go... Maybe that's just wrong.
Yeah. I'm sure.
Like, as young people, we should have had that desire, and then it was great.
Yeah.
Right now, it's like we're here to have fun together and to make it look good, and to stay safe.
Yeah, that's it.
That's great. You had a lot on your written down.
Did we cover
everything, or do you feel that we forgot something?
No, these were just some things about the first year in 1980. The context I had with people here in Germany to start BMX. I mentioned Teichreber, Alfred Duell, a guy from Senior Relations Promotions Films. He made an appointment to come to Holland.
Yeah.
Rundkurs, heißt das Programm.
Mm-hmm.
Teichreber, Shimano, Sam Takaoka from Germany. I have had contact with Kinast. They invited me to give them advice on bicycles, you know, BMX bikes.
Schauf as well, right?
Schauf also, yeah. So a lot of people that were trying to get BMX organized, they should have come together, make themselves an organization. That's what I think. But anyway, it didn't happen like that.
Yeah.
BDR started to get involved, and then things went on from there.
True. How do you feel? Like, I think sport always connects people.
Absolutely.
Over the borders.
Yeah.
And I always feel like there is some hesitance between certain nations that just, there's a certain dislike for Germany, and for a lot of good reason, what happened for the Second World War and so on.
Yeah.
But I do feel that the sport actually always combines and connects. And I really feel like all the Dutchies I've gotten to know who BMX, they're just BMXers.
Yep.
So we're all just in that world of BMX.
I have no, in any way, any feeling about that. That's the past.
Yeah.
And the people I met from Germany are good people. It goes for France. A lot of people can't manage them a lot, but I have good connections with them too. And it also depends a little bit on the person you are, I think. But England, the same thing. America also. Although there is a lot of plastic there, if you know what I mean. But no, I have no difficult feelings about not having fun with other foreign riders, friends.
That's what makes the sport so great.
Absolutely.
It just really connects.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
That's it. Hey,
now I think it was, again, it's a blast to have you.
Yeah.
It's an honor. Like, honestly, this is like if you... It's really good to meet the person who actually made my sport possible in this country. It's as easy as that. And that's who you are.
Glad to hear that.
And, you know, I was this kid who started with, you know, we had Bonanza bikes.
Yeah.
And we rebuilt them. And then I got a Stingray and rebuilt
Here
that.
We go.
And, you know, you just kept going. And, I wasn't allowed to motocross. So, BMX was my world. And it turned into a great one. And that's thanks to you.
Yeah. Well, thank you for the interview, because I think you're a good interviewer.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, good questions.
Thank you. Awesome.
Riders Ready. Der Old School BMX Podcast.